League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line is Jim Ozarski. He is the Bucks reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Shout out to those of you catching this podcast on 97.3 The Game. You get a Monday night preview of this podcast while the Bucks are probably playing the Charlotte Hornets at the same time. The rest of you will be catching this Tuesday morning, so we only really have one game to talk about, given when we're recording. And Jim, that game was not good. It was against the Brooklyn Nets, a team that has fallen out of the Eastern Conference standings, but a team that no one can really take lightly because they still do have Kyrie Irving. And once Kevin Durant is healthy and Ben Simmons gets into the lineup, they'll have three pretty close to superstar players in that lineup. Still a dangerous team. And the Bucks just can't seem to keep things going in the third quarters, especially, which we'll talk about. But this Nets team is a team that they could see again this postseason. And we've talked a little bit lately about how the Bucks have just kind of, you know, been like, I don't want to say sleepwalking, but they've been treading water a little bit. And this is a game they probably should have won and didn't. And I got to say, it just continues to raise another red flag that this Bucks team might struggle against these teams that they're likely to see in the East. What were your takeaways from that game?
Yeah, I think The most interesting thing is, so they come out of the break with two practices, and that's rare. I mean, the Bucks probably takes them a month to practice twice. And in those 2 days, JR, Mike Budenholzer and, you know, a handful of players made available spoke about a few things, you know, to focus on in the final, at the time, 22 games. So there was overall consistency. There was better play in the third quarter, better end of game execution, cutting down on turnovers, and they basically went 0-for-4 in losing to the Nets. All of those things did not happen. And yet, you know, on the other hand, you could say, well, they only lost by three, right? Like, they missed 13 free throws too on top of it. It was just an ugly game. And yet, yeah, they're, you know, continue to sort of struggle against these top tier winning teams at times. I mean, obviously they handled Brooklyn twice before, and the Nets were struggling. Yeah, I think it was only their third win since January, you know, when Kevin Durant got hurt. So I would say that was probably the most disappointing thing, is when you have two practices, a shoot around, and you have sort of the come together, these are the things we got to do, and then literally do none of the things you had to do. So we'll see. They typically rebound pretty well. You know, they don't really string together games like that. You know, and that's important because of 22 games left, half are against teams in the top 10 in the East, JR. And that's not even including, you know, Phoenix returns at the end of this week. You've still got, I think, another trip to Utah. I mean, they've got another trip to Memphis. We're not even talking about the top teams in the West they've got on the schedule yet. So, yeah, I think they need to dial it up a little bit. It was not a great start to that, though, against the Nets.
This week is really kind of an all-time great week. If you're a Bucks fan, there is that Hornets game we talked about that's already happened, most likely, or has started if you're listening to this. And then you've got Miami, the team that's atop the Eastern Conference, coming to Pfizer Forum on Wednesday. You've got Chicago in Chicago on Friday, and then the Phoenix Suns. And we'll talk more about the Phoenix Suns in a minute. They, of course, met just a couple weeks ago in Phoenix. They'll be coming back for the first time since the Bucks won the 2021 NBA championship, so that should be a fun one again. But none of these are easy, you know? Got to beat the Hornets, got to beat the Thunder, got to beat the Hawks. And honestly, the way the Nets were playing, like you said, got to beat the Nets. This is a team that is, as we mentioned, equidistant between the top spot in the East or the play-in game in the East. And I don't know if I believe that that's that the play-in game is something that they will be able to 100% avoid, that they will have no trouble avoiding it because they do need to win some of these games. This third quarter phenomenon, I tend to think of it as like, I don't know, sometimes I think teams, fans get overemphasized when individual quarters go bad. I think that does even out over the course of a season. But it is becoming notable, and it's rare to see a Bucks team not be able to finish a game until recently. We've seen a couple examples where even fourth quarters have gone south on them. In this game, both of those things happened. They were really cold in the third quarter and then took the lead and looked like they had taken control of the game, and then they, you know, petered it away in the fourth quarter. I think you can attribute that to some of the things we've talked about. They are very shorthanded. They still don't have George Hill. Of course, we all know Brook Lopez has been missing all year, but with Pat Connaughton out, their guard depth has taken a beating. They have added, you know, DeAndre Bembry and Javon Carter, but those guys are primarily defensive players. You're not putting those guys out there for crunch time minutes necessarily, although Carter was on the floor late in that game. So I think that's all we're looking at here. Is there more to it than that, do you think, Jim?
Yeah, it's hard to say because it's, you know, a team that can build a double-digit lead by halftime. You'd think, you know, they wouldn't have an issue playing good basketball in just the third quarter alone. And Bobby Portis is really getting tired of this. He was the first one on the team to really drill into it. And I think it was in Charlotte, actually, you know, a month ago when he said third quarters were trash. And that was after already a month of sort of dealing with it. And so he's sort of beside himself after, you know, speaking to him post game against the Nets, JR. It is very weird. And it's one of those sort of intangible things. I mean, it translates to the court. I mean, clearly they're not making enough shots, or maybe, you know, they're not moving the ball as well as in the previous half, or obviously something's happening defensively where they're giving up 40 plus points. And to your, you know, it's you're right. Sometimes social media or maybe a fan base can latch onto a thing, but this is actually pretty real for the Bucks. I mean, you know, the month of January, maybe they won two third quarters or three. I mean, like that's legit. That's not just, oh, I think a thing's happening. Like that's a trend, right? And I don't, and Chris Middleton said, he's like, look, if we had the answer to this, you know, we would have answered it. So I really don't know what they need to do. I don't know if it's running a little more structured stuff. I don't know if it's one of those where you, and this would sort of break the Bucks offense to a degree, JR, but like, because Giannis and Chris aren't really built this way, but I wonder if you make an effort to have Middleton or Holiday or Giannis, like, that's a time. Like, come out of the half, one of the big three needs to score six or seven straight points, right? I don't know. I don't know if that's a solution, but I mean, at this point, I think they should try anything, right?
Yeah, for sure. Because I just glanced at the standings. I didn't realize they were now just a game ahead of the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics were left for dead weeks ago. I don't know what happened there. But that's for the sixth spot in the East. And, you know, I'm reminded, I was listening to talk radio after the Bucks lost to the Nets the next day. And a lot of talk about, this was a national radio program, like, well, you can't rule out the Nets, like we just said at the outset of this program. And you can't. The Nets are poised to be very good, whether or not they're a seventh or eighth seed or even a nine in the postseason. Like they're still a very dangerous team that you have to be very concerned about. If you're a top seed, you probably don't want to see them in that opening round if they get through the play-in system. And I guess that's probably still true of everything. And the Bucks, like, you know, I mentioned how tough the schedule is. Realistically, the Bucks are not going to go 0-3 in those games. They'll probably win one of them, maybe two of them, maybe all three. Who knows? So the Bucks are still good enough to, when they get to the playoffs, flip a switch. Brook Lopez gets healthy. I mean, it's just hard because we have all this regular season. We think this Bucks team is a playoff team, so it's easy to, you know, get wrapped up in the minutia of the week by week. But in reality, this Bucks team could be completely different when we get to the postseason, and none of this might matter. Certainly, we had conversations like this last year when they fell off the pace of a top seed in the Eastern Conference, and that didn't end up mattering exactly. Although I'm sure they would have rather played Game 7 of that series with Brooklyn in Milwaukee, but I guess, like, how concerned should anyone be about the Bucks standing as a playoff team? Like, yes, this could be signs of things to come, but it also might not be. It also might be that they're just sleepwalking through this part of the season and they're going to be fine when you get to the postseason. What is the alarm level in terms of thinking this team could compete for a championship? Has it changed at all in the last few weeks?
No, I don't think it's changed. I think there's 21 games left as we talk. They're 4 games behind in the loss column of the Heat, right? They play the Heat once. So maybe the actual, like, claiming the one is drifting a little further away, right? You know, especially if they lose to the Heat, I think that mathematically, I mean, unless something crazy happens, that might be close to impossible, right? To make up 6 games in 17. I don't know, but
they only have 20 game, like 21 games left. It's crazy how you think of the All-Star game as the halfway point, not even close in the NBA.
No. So I think the Bucks actually, you know, talking about their discussions out of the break, and the standings were one of them. Look, and Budenholzer even said, he's like, he probably is the most, I don't care about standings coach you're going to hear from. But he did admit that you don't want to be the 7 seed because you want that week off. You don't want to play extra playoff games, especially when you just don't know in a very short series what could happen. And the players admitted it too. The players said they're well aware of where they are in the East. And now, Jerry, you mentioned Game 7 in Brooklyn. Well, let's face it. The Bucks, if Philadelphia didn't implode, they would have had to go to the Philly for the East Finals. Now, it didn't happen that way. So the Bucks actually had 2 home court series. To me, I think you don't want to be anything lower than the 4 seed, to me, because you want to give your team, give yourself the chance that you host one series for sure, and then maybe you get a second one if there's an upset along the bracket. If you're the 5 seed, you're on the road all the time, and while this team obviously, you know, won a title in that scenario, that it's set up to make it harder to do that, right? Like, that's the whole point of seeding. So I think if you're the Bucks, you want to be in the top 4, wherever that is at this point, just for that alone. And look, let's be honest. No doubt ownership would like extra home games as well.
Yeah, of course. Yes, and like you mentioned, the Bucks did get home series, the 2 most important series of the postseason. I think most will agree. Brooklyn and Phoenix, they won those on the road. And so Phoenix, as we mentioned, is coming back later this week to Pfizer Forum. That is the first time since Game 6. Of course, Giannis dropping 50 points in an unforgettable July 20th performance. Say that again?
Not 49.
Not 49. Not 51. Yeah. 50. 50 exactly. that Chick-fil-A drive-thru might live forever longer than the actual performance itself, the 50-point performance itself. Can't have one without the other, it feels like. But Giannis was great there. Game 4, of course, is a game everyone remembers because of the block Giannis had on DeAndre Ayton going up and swatting away an alley-oop that would have given put the Suns in the lead. And, of course, the Bucks win that game, crucial game. So I know you're writing a little bit about this, about Giannis and about the Suns coming back. You know, it's at this point, I think every win is important. I don't think this one, especially after they already played in the Valley, I don't think this one is going to have maybe quite that extra weight, but it's still a Sunday game, and I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention. What are you thinking about looking into that game?
Yeah, again, look, they went to Phoenix, and the Suns kind of put it on them. You know, it was a little disappointing, I guess, in that way. And there's been a couple of games like that this year, JR, where the opponent, Cleveland comes to mind specifically, you know, where you know the home team really was up for it and showed it, right? And actually, I think, you know, I don't think the Serge Ibaka move, that was done just before that game, I want to say. You know, so the Bucks were a little shorthanded, but it sort of underscored again the need for that other big, even as Brook Lopez makes his way back now. And yeah, the Suns, look, they're Chris Paul's out. You know, the point guard won't be playing. That's a big loss. That changes things. So we'll see. But they're still one of the, if not the best team in basketball at this point. And what's interesting, JR, so of course, first time since Game 6, as you mentioned. And I would be remiss not to say that that series and Game 4 in Milwaukee, right, JR, the block? That was the second-to-last highlight of the NBA 75 video in Cleveland. So as they're introducing the 75 greatest players of all time, of which Giannis is the youngest, that was the play that they chose to represent Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I know you and I talked about that during the finals, right? Like the signature moments, right, of a player's career. And that's what the NBA chose as like, I mean, that's right. I mean, that means something. That's what they felt, right? So Giannis has been blocking alley-oops and chase down blocks for his whole career. That's not really new. But I kind of got into a deep dive on that topic, talked to some players, Miles Bridges, DeAndre Ayton actually spoke, our colleague at the Arizona Republic, Dwayne Rankin, helped us out. And Ayton, I'm going to tell people to check this out online at jsonline.com in the middle of this week, print in the print edition. Thank you. If you have that, if you want to open up your coffee and right before that matinee on Sunday. And DeAndre Ayton, JR, doesn't think it should be a block. I'll just leave it at that. An interesting perspective, especially considering that that is, you know, A, it is a block officially, but it's now considered what? Giannis's signature play in like the history of the top 75 players of all time. So, yeah. You know, check that out. If you don't have a digital subscription, please pick that up this week or your print edition on Sunday. It's a kind of interesting thought from the Sun Center.
Whatever. I'm going to have to read that to know what's going on there. Yeah, I think it is a signature moment because you could, the 50-point game was great, obviously, but it's also not a single moment you can boil it down to in a video clip. And the Jrue Holiday play is more about Jrue Holiday than it is Giannis. He's on the other end of a sensational, legendary alley-oop, but that's not the singular talent of Giannis on display there. That's a Jrue Holiday play. And the block, on the other hand, just man, it's just underscoring for me how Milwaukee was treated at just an absolutely epic time in the summer of 2021 where you know, the Deer District is going. That's a lasting visual. You've got all these signature plays, battles back from 2-0 deficits. Just a crazy time. Giannis overcoming injury, all very crazy stuff. You mentioned briefly Brook Lopez is working his way back. We've seen him now at practice. I get the sense the timetable that we discussed for him has not changed, that we're still looking at a pretty late season arrival for him if we do indeed see him again this season. I don't know if seeing him at practice solidifies that we will in fact see him again this season, or if that still remains a mystery to you. And then I do also want to talk about Javon Carter a little bit, the addition that they made early last week. You know, we had talked about Goran Dragic actually on this podcast being a possibility, and then by the time it posted, that was no longer a possibility because he had signed with the Nets, so I erased that from the podcast. But I think it's a little disappointing for Bucks fans. They wanted that offensive weapon, Goran Dragic. It seemed like he fit exactly what they needed at the moment in time with where their injury situation is at. He chooses Brooklyn, a rival, and the Bucks get, you know, the guy that Brooklyn cut to put Dragic on the roster and Javon Carter. So that feels like a disappointing, you know, lesser of two players situation, certainly. What, as you look ahead with him on the roster, with Brook Lopez's situation, like, do you see the Bucks changing shape a little bit here with these guys coming back, on the road to coming back?
Yeah, so quickly for Lopez, you know, he did return to the practice court in a, like, team capacity during the break, like that Thursday, Friday before the Nets game. That was a step forward. He was cleared for that. Mike Budenholzer cautioned it was just a portion of practice, and he's not, and he's, I think his quote was, a ways away. And a ways could still fit what John Horst's goal was. And Horst was that he could play some April games before the playoffs. Like, that, I think, is the, you know, has been, I guess, as close to a timeline of what they hope that they've set. So, They head on a long road trip where they go through the Bay Area and Sacramento. That's not exactly close to LA where his doctors are, but it's definitely closer than Milwaukee. So we'll see, you know, in the coming week, if maybe that's, if he heads out that way, if maybe that's the final kind of clearance check, you know, to resume you know, more intense workload. Because frankly, that might have to happen on the road. I mean, they've got two extended road trips at the end of March, you know, before those very few games in April. But yeah, so that's definitely a positive. Now, Javon Carter is interesting. You're right, Goran Dragic. You know, they flirted with the Bucks. You know, is elected to sign in Brooklyn. Obviously, he's got a long history with Steve Nash. They played together in Phoenix. Javon Carter, you know, JR, it's funny. I've said you're going to see, if you're a Bucks fan, you're going to see way more of him in these 20 games than ideally the next 20, right? Like, if that means Pat Connaughton's back, ideally George Hill is back. George Hill's been out since January 28th. Maybe the next time we get together, he'll be cleared to play. We don't know. This neck thing is becoming reminiscent of the Brook Lopez injury. Like, he suddenly didn't play because of soreness, and now it's 2 months, you know, or getting into the second month, I should say. He's been out since January 28th. So we don't know what's going on there. So I guess if Hill can't come back, then, yeah, Javon Carter becomes that sort of top-of-the-key defensive presence. Bucks fans got a little glimpse of what he can do. He forced Dragic into an eight-second violation. Yeah. I think he nearly got another one. That's his role. Like, he's hit some threes for Brooklyn this year, you know, but it's defense. You know, he's got some playoff experience. He was with the Suns last year. He did not play in the finals, but he did get some. He played seven of their playoff games, you know, in the run-up. So, I mean, in terms of the pressure and just understanding a playoff run, I mean, he lived it a year ago. But yeah, that's my thought, JR, is like, let's assume, we said this about Brook Lopez, right? Let's assume George Hill will get healthy. Yeah, we're not going to see a ton of DeAndre Bembry, Javon Carter in the playoffs. But the Hill thing now, I mean, again, we're a month into it. So I guess that just bears further watching here as we go.
Let me throw you a wild card. I think I know the answer to this, but because the guards are where the Bucks are deficient right now in terms of bodies. If they had kept DeMarcus Cousins, do you think the Bucks would be better off? And I say this even though we indicated when at the time, like, this is a move that has to be made considering the playoffs. They don't want to pay this guy the full season salary, knowing that he might not be playable in the playoffs. So this might not be a question you can answer yet. But the Nuggets have, you know, he's won every game. He's won every game that he's played with the Nuggets. The Nuggets have been on a good run here. Obviously, he's only getting like 13 minutes a game, and he's a big, and I don't know if the Bucks necessarily need him right now. But do you think at this point they maybe regret making that move away from him? I know a lot of fans obviously were upset that when the Bucks moved on from Cousins.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he's definitely probably a better fit in Denver. I don't know how much defense Denver plays, to be honest, but like the way they play offense is a little, I mean, Jokic is just a different kind of force, right? Than Giannis is. But you're right. He clearly has fit well there. I don't know. It's a good question. I think Ibaka was always, I should say he was their plan, but I think getting that kind of big was the focus. And maybe if Cousins proved he could defend at a high level, he could have been that guy. But I don't think he ever was that guy. I mean, I know he was an all-NBA player, and you have to play a little bit of defense to get that award. But that was, as we discussed many times, several leg injuries ago, and he just didn't move like that. So I don't know, Jared, if the Cousins now in Denver is in better shape, which is entirely possible, moving a little better, it's a better fit out there. Look, I think they still would have focused in on like an Ibaka, and then, I mean, look, they have four bigs right now. I really don't think they ever would have gone with five. I mean, four is really unique for Mike Budenholzer. It's the first time in his Bucks head coaching tenure that he has four. So I think as we go, JR, the comp would be Ibaka versus Cousins, because Cousins would have been the fourth big, right? And so we need to see how that develops over time. And it's can't really do apples to apples in terms of points, because it just, I think Denver runs a different kind of offense and all that stuff. But no, I think it was fine for what it was. I think in the long run, they were always going to look for a guy who could run up against Cleveland's 3 7-footers, or, you know, now the Suns have two or three guys, 6'10", or high, you know what I mean? I don't know if Cousins was going to fit that with Giannis and Bobby Portis.
Real quickly, wanted to point out that on jsonline.com, we've started keeping track of the all-time scoring leader in Bucks history. Giannis Antetokounmpo is on course, and if he stays healthy, will, in fact, surpass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most points in Bucks history. That'll be a cool thing. Right now, he's on track to do it during a road trip at the end of March. You can see my regularly updating sort of tracker at jsonline.com. I have to think, Jim, that he'll sit out a game here or there, whether because the Bucks want him to rest or because he's actually, you know, feeling some aches and pains, or I don't think they'll do it exclusively to get him on track to break that record at home. But it is notable that after that road trip, there are a couple home games there where he could conceivably break that mark. So that is something to keep an eye on as well. I think that'll be a pretty cool thing. If it happens, you know, it'll be in the midst of getting, securing playoff positioning. So people might be distracted if they're Bucks fans. But I got to think that's going to be a really special moment. He'll sort of solidify his place as you know, the greatest Bucks player of all time, right?
Yeah, this is like the last one that matters, right, for the franchise. I mean, no disrespect to, games played or field goals made or any of that. But, it's points, right? It was the three-point line, which Chris Middleton toppled Ray Allen, and now it's going to be the all-time points list is Kareem. And if there were, you know, and I think there still could be a debate. I mean, right? It's the whole Favre-Rogers thing. Well, Kareem got to two finals, right?
Right. So, Kareem scored this many points in six seasons. I mean, Giannis was a project where Kareem wasn't, but still, like, you could argue, yeah.
Right, which is fun, but this is the last franchise record of import, because after that, JR, it's all about, right, where does he climb in the annals of all-time NBA records, right? So, it's cool, and he'd have to go on a tremendous, tremendous scoring tear, I think, to do this at home. Before they go on a road trip that goes from Memphis to Philly to Brooklyn. And then it's a back-to-back against the Clippers on April 1st. And those are usually the back-to-backs are kind of ones where suddenly like there's a soreness in there. So it's the one to watch. I think, you know, JR's got some good stuff up already on that. We'll have some good stuff when that happens. You're right. I don't know if it ends the debate, but it definitely, you know, the ledger definitely becomes more weighted toward 34 than 33.
Yeah, and if you find that that chart, Giannis is probably, he's already the all-time blocks leader in franchise history. Yeah. He'll probably be the all-time rebounders, assists, and steals leader, but he's going to have to work at it. That's not a guarantee, and it's not a guarantee that all that stuff will be done even by the end of next year, but by the end of his contract in Milwaukee, I do think he'll probably have all those marks to himself. He'll certainly have the points one, barring something completely catastrophic. Knock on the nearest piece of wood here. All right, let's move into our features for the week. We're going to start with one quick buck.
Desmond Mason with authority. Man. Monte Ellis puts it up at the buzzer and got it.
No way.
Monte Ellis wins the game and then heads to the locker room.
You got to be kidding me. Charlie Villanueva. He has got the mojo going.
To the bell, man. In your face, Brad Lojas.
The Milwaukee Bucks select Larry Sanders from Virginia Commonwealth University. Larry is not here.
One quick buck.
Jim, let me ask you something. Could you tell me, because Javon Carter, the newest member of the Milwaukee Bucks, played at West Virginia. Can you tell me the last time a player from West Virginia played for the Milwaukee Bucks?
Oh, the college West Virginia? No, for some reason I thought of O.J. Mayo. Didn't O.J. Mayo go to like high school in West Virginia?
I don't know that off the top of my head, but I will say that O.J. Mayo was going to be a name I had mentioned in this rundown. However, just tangentially related.
Okay. No, I cannot.
All right. One of the, perhaps not necessarily through fault of his own, one of the great draft busts in Milwaukee Bucks history, Joe Alexander.
That's right.
Joe Alexander, he played, man, only 59 games with the Milwaukee Bucks before the team traded him. He was traded to the Bulls. He only played 8 games there, and that was it. By age 23, he was done in the NBA. He is kind of part of this really long stretch of futility in Bucks first round draft picks, which I'm going to get to in a little bit. But Joe Alexander is a fascinating guy and a fascinating prospect. And if not for the injuries that plagued him, I would have loved to have seen where it could have gone with him. The athleticism was off the charts. But, you know, for 1 year, he's with the Bucks. 2008-09 season, he scores 4.7 points per game, 1.9 rebounds, played 12 minutes, I mean, per game. It just wasn't happening for Joe Alexander. He was a first-round pick, though, in 2008, the 8th pick overall, a late-blooming star out of West Virginia. But he actually was born in Taiwan, moved to China when his father was working for Nestle, lived in China. That's where he started playing basketball. He moved in high school back to the United States in West Virginia. He was fluent in Mandarin. He actually, in a more recent part of his career, he's gotten Israeli citizenship because of some family relations, so he could have Israeli citizenship while playing for Maccabi Tel Aviv. But he lived in Hong Kong. He attended Hargrave Military Academy when he came back to West Virginia. So for a year after high school, he attended there, got better, got a scholarship at West Virginia. It's kind of notable, speaking of him knowing Mandarin, the Bucks actually took an exhibition trip to China after they had drafted him. And while he was there, he, you know, got to hang out with his parents who still lived there, and he got to spoke to a couple assemblies of kids and did so in Mandarin. Just really, I mean, obviously a very interesting, very smart guy. But he was, I guess, a little bit undersized at 6'8", although, you know, he's known kind of as a shooter, a guy who could spread the floor a little bit. he only played 10 games as a freshman, averaged 10.3 points per game as a sophomore in West Virginia. He wasn't a star, but then Bob Huggins came in, John Beilein left. Bob Huggins came in, sort of rededicated to strength training, really got good in his junior season, and became a top 10 guy. Didn't look like the Bucks were going to get a forward in that draft. They had just acquired Richard Jefferson. So it didn't seem like they were going to. They drafted E.G. Onleon the year before. That went very poorly. They traded him. So it wasn't necessarily clear what they were going to do on draft night. This 2008 draft is wild because it's got a million Bucks in it. Although none of the good ones, all the top players in this draft were not Bucks. And then you obviously had Alexander at 8, DJ Augustin at 9, Brook Lopez at 10, Jared Bayless at 11, Robin Lopez at 15, Roy Hibbert, who was a Buck for 5 seconds, and at 17, Serge Ibaka, George Hill, 24 and 26 respectively. Michael Beasley and OJ Mayo were 2 and 3 in that draft. So these are all people that became Milwaukee Bucks and for longer than Joe Alexander, with Roy Hibbert being the exception, being a Buck. This stretch, Jim, where really for like almost, man, it's almost 2 decades, the Bucks couldn't hit on a first-round pick. 2005, they get Andrew Bogut first overall. You could argue about whether that was a good pick in terms of, like, number one value or whatever, but Andrew Bogut was a great player, good player, at the very least. So that's a good one. But, you know, in 96, you go back to 96 where they get Ray Allen, when they drafted Stephon Marbury but got Ray Allen. That's a great pick, obviously. But then after that, it's Danny Fortson in 97 who was traded for Irvin Johnson. It's the legendary Dirk Nowitzki situation in 98 where they come away with Robert Tractor Trailer. No pick in 99. It's Joel Prisbilla, whom they traded. They drafted Jason Collier, got Joel Prisbilla, and also gave up a future first-round pick for that in 2000. That doesn't go well. So no pick in 01. Marcus Hayslip in 02. TJ Ford in 03. More injury situation there. Nothing in 04. Nothing in 06. Gian Leon, Joe Alexander, then Brandon Jennings, who's, you know, solid in 09, but ultimately didn't become a star. Larry Sanders in 10. Jimmer Fredette in 11, who's traded for a bunch of guys, Tobias Harris among them, who was very good, and then they traded him before he got even better. So that's also a sore subject. John Henson in 12. The Bucks, man, they before drafting Giannis was a wasteland of draft picks. Joe Alexander said in an interview a few years ago that it wasn't just him who was the bust; it was the Milwaukee Bucks for how they were developing him. And you know, I can't necessarily disagree with them. You look at the first round track record; there's something to that. So again, though, Alexander traded to the Bulls in 2010. He'd been hurt all year, didn't play until later that season. That is part of a trade that sends Hakeem Warrick to the Bulls, brings John Salmons back. John Salmons was a big part of that Fear the Deer 2010 team. So it actually works out there in the end. Bucks got a pretty great year that 2010 season, that thriller where they took the Hawks to 7 games. In the playoffs, Joe Alexander not remembered fondly. That is this week's One Quick Buck. Any last thoughts, Jim?
That's a stretch. That is a stretch. It just shows you that, you know, other than Bogut, right? Like the idea of trying to make the 7-8 seed and those middle first round picks, you're really just swinging, right? And John Hammond and the previous GMs before that, I'm sure, obviously missed. And then you get a guy like Giannis, which also, let's not forget, that was probably the biggest home run cut they ever took, and they actually connected. So maybe that's Adam Dunlight, right? Like a 18 or 20, a 205, you know, a 205 batting average on some of those. But it goes to show you, it's still one way or the other in the NBA. Either you're winning or you're tanking.
And I think you could argue these were big swings. E.G. on Leon didn't even want to work out for the Bucks, so that was a tough. You didn't know he could be a superstar. He could be what he was, which is just a footnote. Joe Alexander's the same way. I mean, he was a fast rising project who was still a tremendous athlete and who could have become something special. Brandon Jennings the same way. You know, he takes an unusual path to the NBA. You don't really know what you get there, and he flashed some star power early, and it didn't ultimately work out. But, you know, maybe you could maybe even argue John Henson kind of falls into that a little bit. Certainly Giannis does. So the big swings that connect are the ones we all remember. But, you know, if you keep taking those swings, you're gonna miss a few as well. The Milwaukee Bucks definitely missed a few. But Joe Alexander, 59 games. I remember him being here a lot longer, maybe because the hand-wringing has continued for years and years after that. But he just wasn't able to play all that often. So, all right, let's move on to our final segment this week. And it is, as always, what's making Jim mad?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder!
I'm upset.
Say it louder!
I'm upset.
That's my secret, Cat. I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
Yeah, I'm sure people can relate to this one, JR. It is the, you know, you start all of a sudden, you know, some service that you signed up for sells your email address to other services, and then you begin getting the emails, right, of things you didn't sign up for, nor requested, nor want. So what do? You scroll down to the very, very bottom where it says unsubscribe. Click this link. So you hit the button unsubscribe and it says, thank you. And then maybe there's a dumb survey asking why you're unsubscribing and it never says because I didn't ask for this or how did you get my email? But you hit all the buttons. So then you got to hit a button unsubscribe. And the two things usually happen then, JR. One, you get another email from this place that you don't want emails from to say that you've unsubscribed. Or you get that email, and then they still keep showing up. And that, like, I'm currently in a battle with at least two separate, I'm rubbing my face as I say this, like, two separate, I don't know what you call them, entities, I don't know what they are that send these things, of like, how many times do I have to hit unsubscribe and still get these emails? And I just, and I don't understand. It's especially the, you know, it's that combination of why are you doing this? Thank you. We're still going to send it to you anyway.
Well, sometimes it says it takes like 2 to 3 weeks to process or whatever. I'm like, BS, it takes that long to process. It's a simple like listserv. Just remove the name, but they won't do that. They don't want to do that.
No.
I almost have to respect the hustle a little bit, as you know, we both work for an organization that relies on subscriptions, and you know, like every time I run into this with customer service where I want to unsubscribe or delete a service or whatever and find it challenging, hoops I have to jump through, I kind of hate it, but also have to be like, yeah, that's kind of how it works. They're going to make it as difficult as possible because obviously they don't want you to go, right?
Well, yeah, and that could be, look, there's a difference, I think, in trying to get out of something you initially signed up for. It's when your stuff is sold, right? It's like the text that you get. Although I will say, I feel like replying with stop tends to work, although maybe I'm just being naive and that's the other 77 spam calls I get. But like, you know, the unsubscribe, the thank you email for unsubscribing to the email. Blows my mind. And then that almost just guarantees and proves that you weren't actually eliminated. Right?
Yep. We still got you.
The fact that they send you another email to say, we understand that you want us to stop sending your emails. Like, it's like a slap in the face. It's a duel. It's a, here's the thing you don't want. Smack. And then, yeah. So, yeah, that drives me absolutely insane. This is a constant sort of anger that I live in, is just seeing these emails just flood in, JR.
I fully acknowledge I'm one of those people that has an email inbox where I just gave up, you know, like there's some important stuff in there, but it just got over flooded. And I tried unsubscribing for a while and I was like, this is fruitless. I'm still going to get emails from this organization for a while afterwards. And, you know, anytime you sign up for any app or give your email address for anything, you're bound to get a whole bunch of those things. So, it is a sad situation. I think I subscribed, I forget, to a paper, maybe it was Los Angeles or San Francisco. I subscribed to it a couple years ago, purely for like a playoff series or something. I don't remember what it was. And I had to call. And I remember thinking it is almost impossible without elite frustration levels to get rid of this service that I bought for like a month. And, you know, they don't want you to go, man. They will do anything to keep at the top of your, they want their product at the top of your mind. And that's the way to do it, I'm afraid.
Yes.
Alas. All right, Jim, I think we're done here. Unless there's anything else you want to plug, that should do it for this week's edition of the Point Forward Podcast. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and looking forward to speaking with you all again next week.
All right, hope you found us at one of those traditional spots. Podcasts can be found at Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, but maybe you heard us. 97.3 The Game, check us out, the Point Forward Podcast. You can get us right into your phone, and hey, if you got suggestions for one quick buck, that's, again, a Bucks player who is not an all-star or not one of the guys on the championship team, one of the in-between guys, holler at me. I'm on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. He's at Jim Ozarski. Thanks for tuning in. We will chat with you again next week. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.